Well, good morning, everyone. It's Jeff Snyder, founder of The Morning Pulse, your host for the next 60 minutes as we go around the globe to talk about the issues related to retirement, the markets, technology, personal finance, and so much more. And this is our election special. We're going to be talking to the all-stars about their thoughts about the election. It should be really interesting. Our special guest this week is Megan Scipione. She's a financial wellness coach and expert, and we're going to get some insight into what she is seeing from her clients. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this great episode of The Weekly Pulse.
Yeah.
We're going to start things off, as we always do, with senior finance editor from LinkedIn, Mr. Devin Banerjee, who's going to talk to us about social media trends this week. Devin, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. And I know the theme of our show is the election. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there was an election earlier this week. I don't know how anyone in this universe could miss that. But I think it was interesting to kick things off with you, obviously, because you're keeping track of all these social media trends and what people are talking about on your social network. So what's top of mind for you and your readers?
Yeah, we saw a lot of popular conversation this week, kind of on topics at the intersection of politics and business. So not pure politics, but a nice intersection. So the first one, you know, after the election, we saw the minimum wage boosted in a couple states, Arkansas and Missouri among them. So they will soon see the minimum wage increase to $11 and $12 per hour, respectively, by 2021 and 2023. And that obviously compares to the $7.25 mandated by the federal government. So a lot of kind of spirited conversation. You know, we see some people say, look, these states are going to lose jobs to surrounding states that have retained the federal minimum wage. And obviously we see other people on at the other end of the spectrum talking about the benefits for workers in these states who are earning minimum wage now, and we'll see that wage go up. So, you know, a topic that always has people on both ends of the spectrum, but we saw a lot of conversation on social media around that this week after the election.
Yeah, that's a big hot topic. And, you know, I'm not going to go all Milton Friedman on you, but definitely a lot of interesting conversations, I'm sure. And, you know, I don't think that debate ever ends. You know, I think yeah. that's a continuous conversation of what, how do we keep people who are not getting the full, not getting compensated the way they need to or think they need to, and how do we get people there? So that's a topic that we will continue to discuss from now and probably till the end of time.
Yeah, certainly. We also saw healthcare really top of mind for people this week in the election. So 41% of voters, you know, mentioning healthcare as a top issue in their exit polls. And, you know, with Democrats regaining control of the House and actually winning many key governor seats, you know, a few things are clear now going forward. The Affordable Care Act will remain the law of the land, and more states will probably expand Medicaid eligibility. And so definitely kind of a turning point in the conversation around healthcare this week based on the election results. And so, again, with 41% of voters mentioning it as a top issue in the exit polls, we saw a lot of conversation on social media around, you know, the future of so-called Obamacare and Medicaid eligibility. So a lot of conversation around that as well.
Yeah, I mean, from what I had read, this was a huge campaign issue. Even trumped, pun intended, the economy, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is one of these issues that, you know, we're not just talking about healthcare now. We've been talking about healthcare since the Johnson administration with the creation of Medicare.
Yeah.
So more to come on that. And, you know, I really there's not much more I can say to that, Devin. It's a continuous topic and one that we will continue to debate, talk about, and see the results of what policymakers come up with.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, these topics like minimum wage and healthcare and jobs, you know, they are important continuously for people, but we just see them really light up around election times with the rhetoric and with new policies, et cetera. Another topic we saw really light up was it's more of a local, it was a local proposition in San Francisco, Prop C, regarding homelessness, but it had some interesting implications for companies across the country. So basically, voters in San Francisco approved a measure that will charge the largest businesses in the city with an additional tax to help fund, you know, the city's really, you know, staggering endemic, you know, homelessness problem. So voters approved this measure. So companies that earn more than $50 million in revenue will have about 0.5% tax on gross receipts. So that will raise about $300 million a year for the city of San Francisco. What was interesting is the conversation was really split on this one. You know, we saw on social media, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, you know, heavily oppose it, strongly oppose it. Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff actually forked over his own money to help support the proposition. And so it really divided the business community in San Francisco. But I think it just started an interesting larger conversation around, you know, employers' responsibility to sort of help alleviate local city problems, and whether additional taxes can be levied on them to help solve that problem. And, you know, San Francisco voters at least wanted the local companies, you know, many of them technology companies like my employer, for example, but wanted these companies to fork up a bit more to help out.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on the show thematically, you and I have, and as well as the folks on the market segment about so-called ESG, you know, being socially conscious, and this is another way to give back to your community. You know, again, I think you're going to have all people on both sides of the equation. It's exactly like the minimum wage debate. You know, how does this impact society, but also how does it impact the competitiveness of a business? I mean, arguably, it's a very, very small amount of money relative to what these people are earning. But I think it's more the principle that people will argue on. You know, if you do that, what's the next step? And I think that's probably where people are probably going. I was not even aware of this proposition. I'm showing my ignorance here on a lot of local issues. But you know, really, really interesting topics, and it's nice to see. You know, you and I, or you are particularly focused on financial services, and you're the editor of that division. But, you know, these are social issues, and it's nice to see that the platform goes beyond just, you know, the traditional business conversations, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on the politics side, it's nice to see people really focus on sort of those issues that affect people's pockets versus just the pure rhetoric of politics. And so I think, you know, hopefully that's a good sign that people are really thinking through policies more than politics these days. But who knows? Well, we can hope.
Well, let's just hope people are a little bit more kind to one another, that we can have we can agree to disagree and be kind, especially in wake of what's happened the last few weeks with some of these tragic events. Last minute, Devin. So, you know, just for the benefit of the audience, I mean, you do a lot of traveling back and forth between New York and your office in Sacramento. I think it's probably an understatement. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing and kind of how you're trying to move the platform forward in financial services?
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. But, you know, basically, I do go back and forth between San Francisco and New York. Basically, what we're trying to do is think about key audiences on LinkedIn and give them a much more relevant experience, you know, in their LinkedIn feed. So we have this data on our members, of course. We know what industries they're in, their job titles, what companies they work for. And we should be able to use that data, that information, to really target relevant content to them. So, because in the absence of us doing that, you might get some personal updates in your feed or some of the motivational, inspirational things that you see people posting. So essentially what I'm doing, I work with companies, with executives, with professionals in finance to use the LinkedIn publishing platform to put out their news and their views, and to use it as basically a thought leadership platform to talk about the things that matter to people in finance. And then we help distribute that for them. And then I also do a lot of original storytelling, article writing, video interviews, conference coverage, et cetera.
Yep. And there are also other people that cover the various – it's not just the Devin Banerjee Show, although it should be, but you've got other people who cover different sectors as well, like healthcare, I've seen the recall.
That's correct.
Technology, et cetera.
Yeah, we think about healthcare. We think about technology. We're doing a lot with frontline workers actually now. You know, it's a big segment of the LinkedIn – of the social media population. And we're hiring someone for small business coverage. And so, you know, we're basically looking at the LinkedIn membership as segments and then hiring some journalists to help curate content for those different segments.
Well, Devin, always a pleasure. Great to have your insight. Always great to talk to you in general as a person. And thanks for bringing that to the audience. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. You too, Jeff.
Thanks,
Take care.
Bye-bye. welcome back. And from social media to technology, I'm joined now by the Motley Fool technology reporter. Her name, Ms. Natalie Walters. Hi, Natalie. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing okay, and I'm sure you're aware, maybe not. There was an election this week, and still a lot of fallout from that. But I know you've got an interesting take from a technology perspective around the election.
Yes. So there was, of course, there was a lot of attention around Facebook with the 2016 presidential election. People discovered that Russia had been using different social media accounts and different ad campaigns to influence people's voting decisions. And so there was, a lot of discussion about whether that would happen again this year. And Facebook's been taking a lot of precautions to make sure that it doesn't happen again. It even started something called a war room in its offices in California, where employees' only job is to look for disinformation on the platform and to seek out fake profiles that are looking to meddle in our elections. But even so, law enforcement alerted Facebook this week that they had found some suspicious accounts. And so Facebook had to remove more than 100 Facebook and Instagram accounts that were linked to the Russia-based Internet Research Agency. And that's its name. It's IRA. If you're not familiar with that, it's just called Internet Research Agency. And that's the organization that was also involved in the 2016 election fiasco.
Wow.
So, it hasn't been a great year for Facebook, but these are problems that, in my mind, it's hard to fix them 100%. It's great to see they do have a war room, and they're obviously aware of the problem and trying to prevent it from happening again. But when it's so easy to create new profiles, it's the problem that keeps giving. How do you put a complete end to it? I don't know if that's even possible.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think anytime you hear people talk about cybersecurity and data breach security, they always put the onus. Certainly the organization has responsibilities, but also the people, the users, not the shared information. And then even if a company like a Facebook or someone else has employees that are in, quote unquote, a war room, how do you know they're not going to make a mistake and pull something down that was not necessarily disinformation? So, I mean, I think you're, pardon the saying, but you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I think, there's more to come. This is a bigger issue than just one sovereign state, trying to meddle. I think this is, something that's larger in terms of maintaining our privacy and the dissemination of information. I mean, and you hear it all the time, both in the, from the administration and the government to businesses like what we're talking about today.
Right. And it's, if Facebook patches up one area, then hackers will just find another way to hack, Russia will just find another way to meddle, So it's kind of an ongoing thing, and Facebook will just have to keep building up that team that's looking for disinformation.
Yeah, one of the things that's a big trend, and we've talked about this on your segment, is cybersecurity in the retirement industry, and in financial services in general. And it is when people like myself, consultants, are doing due diligence on potential clients, this is a question that comes up all the time. How do you maintain cybersecurity? How do you protect data? And a lot of companies, big and small, use something called ethical hacking, where they actually pay hackers to find the gaps. At the end of the day, there's only so many resources that you have, and you can't find all the gaps. So you've got to turn your people, your human capital into, being more diligent, I think. And when it comes to consuming information, I think people, it's got to pass the smell test. If it doesn't sound right, it probably isn't right.
Definitely. And going to multiple sources for your information, just one article on Facebook.
Or Facebook, yeah. I think people pick on Facebook for a lot of reasons, but, it's the biggest social network, so obviously it's going to get a lot of attention. But example, when you go on a news aggregator site, when I'm doing the Morning Pulse, I try to pull from multiple sources and reputable sources, people that fact check. But if you're, you're just out there and reading a blog, and I'm not opposed to blogs, but you're just reading a blog, how do you know who the author is or authors are and what their motivations are? So I think it's just being sensitive to that. So let's shift gears. I know you also wanted to talk about Alibaba. So what's some news there?
Yes, so this is the biggest day of the year for them. It's called Singles Day, and it's on November 11th, so this Sunday. And this is their celebration of being single. And it has a really interesting background with its name. It got its name from November 11th because one and one is the loneliest number. So it's called Singles Day, and they encourage people to buy things for themselves, you know, treat yourself day. And last year they did $25 billion in sales. And it'll be interesting to see what their sales turn out to be this year, because their sales typically grow a significant amount each year. But, you know, there's been issues with the Chinese economy lately, with it slowing down and tensions between the U.S. and China. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a slowdown in growth this year. But it's also, you know, each year it also extends Singles Day to more and more countries. I think this time, I think I saw 200 countries will be able to participate in Singles Day. So that'll help it with growth. And so if you guys are feeling a little lonely and want a little treat yourself before Christmas, now's the time.
Wow, interesting. You know, so I guess Singles Day is a good thing, but a bad thing. Like, I mean, I just got married, and I can say that it was a good decision on my part to be with somebody. And other people may feel differently. They may, sometimes people want to be on their own. But it's interesting that it's a strategy that I guess has been working for Alibaba. It's getting them more global expansion. And back to a point we were talking about last week, Black Friday. I'm already seeing Black Friday ads. On TV and on my news feeds. What's up with that?
Yeah. And I think it's also similar to like Amazon Prime Day, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that happens every July.
Absolutely. Well, Natalie, always a pleasure to talk to you. Good to see you last week in the studio for our pilot. And you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds great. See you next week.
Bye-bye. Welcome back. And now it's time for our markets segment. And joining me, of course, is Mr. George Grumbacher, president of Money Alignment Academy and also an investment advisor out of Scottsdale, Arizona. And we're going to welcome back to the show Mr. Michael Bozzello. You remember Michael from last week's show. He is the product manager for StockTwits, a social network focused on investors and investor sentiment. Guys, how are you?
Doing great, man.
Hey, Jeff. How are you? Great to be here.
It's great to have you back, Michael. George, always a pleasure to talk to you. And I should note that Kevin Kelly and Oliver Rennick are both off on assignment. What assignments, we don't know. We'll see next week. So, Michael, I'm going to come to you. You know, StockTwits is influential is the right word, but a very well-known social media platform where you can, figure out investor sentiment. We just had midterm elections. I'm not sure if anyone on this call is aware of that, but want to kind of gauge what the feedback has been from your constituency based on Tuesday's results.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting chatter around midterm elections. I think, as you described, we are a social network, and a lot of things that people discuss on the site, we basically analyze the sentiment and come out with scores for people to see. So I have some interesting stats here I thought I'd share with you guys. So prior to the midterm election, we basically saw the SPY stream about 40% bullish. And post the midterm elections, we've actually seen a pretty big bullish move now in sentiment, and we're now at 51% bullish. So I think overall investors on the site, sort of the elections and the elections being over as a bullish sort of sentiment shift.
Interesting. I'm not sure if they're really over though, based on some of the news I've seen.
We're still dragging our feet down here.
Yeah, Arizona, Florida, and a couple of other Georgia. I think there are some results that are still quote unquote pending. I guess we're going to see what comes of that. But, you know, I think the markets like stability, George. Even though the elections are not settled in Arizona, what's the general conversation themes that you're having with clients and your customers?
Yeah, I think that whether or not some of the things in the Senate aren't settled or not, it does appear that the U.S. House of Representatives is going to change hands from Republican control to Democrat. And what we do know historically is that when that happens since 1896, the market will return an average of 1.9% the next year. So if things follow that trend, it's going to be a pretty flat year with the market. So, you know, I'm always talking to people about the same kinds of things, just making consistent contributions to your core investment, if that is your 401k, but then having money available to take advantage of opportunities when they pop up throughout the year. And so when the market's going to be generally flat, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be great buying opportunities here and there. And if you've got dry powder, so to speak, or just liquid monies, you're able to buy opportunities, buy investments at a good price.
Yeah, I'm looking at – actually, Mike, I'm looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average right now. It's about 1:30, 1:40 p.m. Eastern time. Dow's down over 254 points. That doesn't necessarily mean anything because we always have a lot of volatility in the market. But it was doing pretty well the last couple of days where things are really popping, I guess, as a result of the election. How much does politics – and this is more of a philosophical question for you. I don't want to put you on the spot. But how much does politics really – factor into the sentiment that you're seeing from your user base and investors?
I think it absolutely does. I think we see that through our message volume. So to give you an idea, I have our data science team run some stats that I thought might come up today. We did basically an average of about 80 messages a day using the word election. And then into the election, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, we saw a 1,500% increase in that word. So you know, investors, traders, that they're speaking about it, it's top of mind. Now, how long it stays top of mind, I think that's sort of a different question.
Yeah, absolutely. George, you know, I know we preach long-term conviction, you know, saving, planning for the long term. But these things that come up, the up and down of the market, that rattles people. I mean, it rattles people. Even the most savvy investor rattles them to the core sometimes.
Oh, right? For sure. I mean, our brains are such useful tools, except in circumstances such as this, when there is volatility or uncertainty, it makes us do irrational things. And it's pretty interesting to hear about the activity on the StockTwits board, because, I mean, I think a lot of that's got to be driven by just sentiment and emotion, if not purely. So I think that's super interesting. So.
Yeah, is that you think that's the case, Michael? I mean, you know, how much do people? I mean, I've been on the platform. You know, I know there are very analytical folks, quantitative folks, but that emotion, that sentiment, does drive some investors.
Absolutely, I think George is right. I think you know, very volatile days. We're going to see a lot of volatility in the sentiment too, and it's sort of, you know, chicken before the egg type of thing. So price moves, sentiment moves with it. That's always going to be the case. But I think, you know, when we see these volatile days, we see our activity just go through the roof because the emotions and sentiment of what people are feeling, that's what drives the market. And we get to really see that day in, day out. So, you know, we're seeing that a little bit today on this pullback. But I think overall with the way the week went, you know, it was a pretty interesting commentary on the site.
Yeah. George, let me come to you. The Federal Reserve leaves rates unchanged, but notes slowing in business investment. Thoughts about the Federal Reserve decisions, you know, keeping the rates as they are?
Yeah, I know that that President Trump has been using his voice to, I guess, motivate them to not make drastic changes. And I'm going to give credit to the Federal Reserve because they have not acted hastily at all. In fact, they've been very, very measured and obviously decided not to make changes. We're going to see changes. I mean, that's going to happen. I think everybody was a little bit surprised it didn't happen already. So, but I do think that they are the opposite of acting emotionally, just making good policy decision.
Yeah, I think you were understated in the president's comments.
Right.
I think it was more like bludgeoning people, but that's just my personal opinion. You know, you can take what you want from different words. Michael, how about yourself? How much does the Federal Reserve, you know, I think in my mind, you know, I think there's a lot of people talking about equities, individual securities in, you know, maybe cryptocurrency and other things in stock twits, but do bonds – does the Federal Reserve policy kind of eke its way into the conversation as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the misconceptions people might have about stock twits without knowing it, because we have a large millennial demographic, is that they're not speaking about the Fed or they're not speaking about bonds and interest rates. And that's actually not the case. That's a huge part of the chatter we see on the site. And there's a lot of savvy long-term investors. We have our short-term, you know, day traders as well. But one of the things, the trends that I've noticed with FOMC and interest rates, is that it kind of keeps coming back to the same thing. We kind of know what to expect. We don't see a lot of, you know, volatility from the Fed themselves. And then people say, oh, well, we kind of expected that. And then they're already on to the next thing. They're already on to tariffs or the dollar or what Trump's saying next. So that's kind of been the theme with the Fed for us for quite a while now.
Well, great. Michael, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming back on and joining us. We're happy to have you on the segment. And George, as a grizzled veteran, thank you so much for putting up with me and giving us your insight. Guys, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you all. Well, George, I'll talk to you next week, and Michael, we'll see you every other week on the program starting today.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Bye, guys. Bye. Welcome back, and I'm very pleased to be joined by financial wellness coach and consultant, Ms. Megan Scipione. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much. It's great to be with you this morning.
It's great to be with you as well. And you're a financial wellness coach and consultant. This is obviously a very important topic now with many Americans. People are not saving. Let's start off with, what are some of the key trends that you're seeing with some of your clients?
So, Jeff, thanks so much. You know, one of the primary things I'm seeing is that most people don't have an organizational structure to their household finances. And so really I'm working with clients to put that framework in place. You know, it's talking about things that are, you know, really easy, putting a budget together, spending less than you earn, having an emergency savings fund, taking advantage of company offerings such as a 401k program.
Yeah, that's a really important. I mean, I think, you know, you're really coming at this, and I think the industry has kind of shifted to a more holistic approach. I hate using buzzwords, and that is a buzzword, but really all-encompassing, looking across multiple things, not just retirement, putting together a budget, as you mentioned, healthcare, all these things kind of fit together in the puzzle that is retirement planning and financial planning.
That's exactly right. Really trying to put people in a position where they know what's coming in, they know what's going out, they have an attack plan for their debt, and they can start looking longer term and achieving some of those longer term goals. Retirement is one of the big ones, but you know what? College education is also a really big nut for most families to be thinking about. So the earlier that these professionals can get organized, the better they're going to be down the road.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm interested in your feedback. You know, I've been out on the road traveling a little bit about and trying to talk to many Americans. My sense, and here's where I'd be interested in your opinion, is that people just feel really overwhelmed today. You know, maybe they don't understand all the financial information that they're getting. They don't understand some of the basic economics. They don't understand they understand the value of a dollar, but maybe not necessarily how to use money. And maybe that's a area of possible improvement in our education system. But what's your thoughts in terms of the stumbling blocks?
You know, that's exactly right. I think you've hit on a few of them. Some of it is not having the financial literacy either in a formal education institution, whether it be high school or university. Many people don't have, you know, another way that kind of money knowledge is handed down is by generation. And so if your parents didn't have a good handle on what to do with money, you may not also. And I think you point to the fact that people are really busy.
Yeah.
I speak with busy professionals who are not only holding down full-time jobs, in some cases they're pursuing advanced degrees, and they have children at home and working full time. So there's just really not a lot of time. And I think the one real missing thing, just in general, is the fact that most people want a plan. They want a framework that's easy and that flows and that makes sense for them. So first, you do this. Second, you do this. And that's what I'm trying to teach folks, is a framework of easy steps to follow, so that no matter what kind of financial challenge or opportunity they face, even after they work with me, they know what approach to take to get themselves on track.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that you are coming at this as an educator. You know, you've been in the industry for a long period of time, but you're coming at this trying to educate people so that they are self-sufficient and independent and can gain that independence over time.
That's exactly right. So I've worked in retirement space for over 20 years, something I'm very, very passionate about. And I can only help a small fraction of folks at this point. So I really applaud you for the Roads to Retirement, some of the other work that you're doing. I think the more we get the message out and make this kind of a normal part of your everyday living, the better it will be.
Yeah, I think you candidly, you know, I see the news every day. There are a lot of things going on in people's lives, as we just talked about. Retirement's not top of mind for a lot of reasons, but we've had a national conversation on healthcare. Healthcare in today's dollars is somewhere roughly between $200,000 and $300,000 for a couple retiring today. They're going to have to spend that kind of money. But maybe we need a national conversation on retirement. What Social Security is, how people can budget, how people can save, how they can be, they can still spend money on the things they need, on the goods and services they want to buy, but that they need to think about their passions today, but also their futures of tomorrow.
That's exactly right. And I think most people have this view that a budget is really bad. A budget can be really good because it's really just a plan for your cash flow for the month. And it's really giving you permission to spend. So I'm going to put $200 in a particular bucket, and I can feel good about I'm going to spend to that dollar level. And then once I'm there, I'm not going to spend again until I hit the next month. It's really, as you said, it's the unfortunate thing is about the present bias. And most people are too busy today with today's worries to be thinking about the future. So the more we can teach folks about kind of putting that cash flow plan in place and siphoning off some of their earnings for tomorrow, the better we'll be.
Yeah, and I think I know the industry, and you and I both know this because we've worked together in various capacities over the years. You know, the industry has really tried to automate. So we have automated tools. We have the Pension Protection Act, which gave way to auto-enrollment, auto-escalation. We've got these digital tools that are being developed and rolled out, which I think are very good. But we don't want to automate this so that people and take the personal element out completely. I mean, that's just my own personal bias here. I think that people need to become engaged, become involved. Yes, we need to prevent people from making mistakes, pulling their money out too early, things like that. But you can't divorce the people, the individual, from being a participant in their own success.
That's exactly right. And just think about generally, you know, you as an everyday professional, you are, you know, faced with numerous opportunities and crossroads where you need to make a decision and it's going to involve money. And so you probably are typically making the right choices day in and day out. Most people are not making those right choices day in and day out. And it's not because they don't want to make the right choice. Mm-hmm. It's just they don't understand what the right choice is. Should I buy the car? Should I put it on a loan? Should I lease it? Or should I buy it scaled down and buy something that I can afford to pay cash outright? So it's those types of challenges. You've got those big money decisions that are cycling through your life kind of almost every year. And it's hard to automate those, I would agree.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we have a challenge with is that there's a distrust. The trust of government, right? Distrust of big financial institutions. And, you know, the DOL kind of the present DOL kind of sacked the fiduciary rule, or at least they're not going to challenge it in the court. to implement it. And I think that those things can also work against people, because some things just develop a negative bias in our world.
That's right. And then I think the average person tends to gloss over.
Yeah, absolutely. They tend to gloss over that. And then, you know, for example, we had fee disclosure back in 2012 that gave people the fee information. Maybe it was not as complete as it could be or should be. But, you know, I feel like a lot of that kind of went under the rug, although it created a lot of opportunity for the U.S. Postal Service and paper distributors.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. Well, Megan, we're going to have to leave it there, but we certainly appreciate your feedback and your efforts in this space. It's quite needed. And we'd love to have you back on the show at some later point.
Jeff, thanks so much. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Have a great day, great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Welcome back. It's our personal finance segment. And welcome back into the studio, Ms. Ali Melito. Sorry, Ali, and Mr. Jacob Passy from MarketWatch, Dow Jones MarketWatch. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little tongue-tied, obviously. I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name, Ali. It's Alessandra Melito. We call her Ali. Good to have you both.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I know, and again, I apologize, but let's get started. We had an election. You know, we've been talking thematically throughout the whole show about the impact of the election. You did a piece. You and Jacob both did pieces. Ali, you focus on the meaning of the Democrats taking control of the Congress on potentially on retirement, pensions, et cetera. So what's the thesis of your story?
Yeah, so the Democrats flipped the House, but the Republicans kept the Senate, so that means gridlock. Gridlock isn't always the best thing. It's not necessarily the worst thing for retirees, future retirees, but it's not necessarily the best thing because, obviously, they're different parties and they're not going to agree on a lot of stuff. Plus, the executive branch, the president, is on the Republican side, so you know there's still going to be a bunch of battles. That being said, I looked at some of the more prominent parts of retirement, and this is what I found. So for pensions, because there were also a few governor races as well, for pensions, it was pretty much a win. Some of the states like Oregon and what was the other one, Colorado, they had candidates who were saying they wanted to get rid of pensions and switch over to 401k style plans, and that, you know, that could have been detrimental to the people who have pensions. But those candidates lost to Democrats, and the Democratic candidates, they didn't want to do that. They wanted to keep the pensions. They had some ideas for what to do with pensions, like maybe have people contribute a little bit more to their pensions as well as the employer, but overall they're going to keep their pensions. Then for Social Security and Medicare, I was speaking to people who said it's been relatively quiet on those fronts. A lot of people didn't talk too much about them on the platform. Not to say that they weren't mentioned at all, but it just wasn't as prominent as, say, like immigration and the economy and healthcare. But that being said, the Democrats, they're more in favor for social keeping, maintaining, expanding Social Security compared to Republicans. The Republicans had said in the past that they wanted to cut funding to the programs or they wanted to just restructure it overall. And Democrats, you know, they're saying they don't want to do that. They would rather expand. So while nothing is exactly being done at the moment, what we could see is just more talking about it. And that could be good for future retirees because they'll get to learn a little bit more about some of the issues going on in the House and Senate, and then they can make their own decisions in 2020 or ask more questions and hopefully see more of that in the presidential debates and so on and so forth in the future.
Yeah.
Something close to my heart, the fiduciary rule, which is dead. The Department of Labor has mentioned the fiduciary rule and its priorities for next year, but people are thinking that's more along the lines of like what the SEC will do with the fiduciary role, and then the DOL will just agree with that. But because some Democrats are more in favor of the fiduciary role, we might see that come back. Who knows? I mean, it wouldn't basically nothing is certain because they, you know, the House can do whatever they want, but they still have to go through, you know, legislation will still have to go through the Senate and, of course, the president who can veto things. And lastly, investing. So gridlock is usually a pretty good thing for markets. Markets respond well to midterm elections and gridlock. But that does not necessarily mean that you should get wild with your own investing. Retirement is still a long-term goal. So as excited as you might be about markets doing well in the future, stay calm.
Thank you, Allie. Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in this lame duck session and then when the Congress gets going, because we have brand new committee chair people, chairpersons,
yeah.
And Richie Neal is going to be taking over the gavel for the House Ways and Means Committee. So that should be really interesting. Hopefully it remains, retirement remains the last bipartisan issue or one of the last bipartisan
yeah.
issues in retirement. So more to come on that. Jacob, you wrote a piece similarly, I'm tongue-tied today, on healthcare. So what did you find? What's going to happen? Open your crystal ball.
So the biggest, single biggest revelation or, new thing to come because of the midterms is that the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is safe. Because Democrats took back the House, it is extremely unlikely that the Republicans would succeed in repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. And that's certainly of comfort to folks who buy their insurance on the individual marketplaces, who have pre-existing conditions, et cetera. Now, because that doesn't mean that there won't be discussion about it. There was bipartisan legislation this past year in the Senate looking to stabilize the individual marketplaces and, usher in some other changes to the Affordable Care Act to reduce the cost to the folks getting those plans. So there's potential for bipartisan efforts on that. There's also potential for bipartisan legislation looking to make drug prices come down. That's something that Democrats mentioned in many of their platforms, and it's also something that President Trump has said he wants to focus on. So that's probably the most likely area where we will see developments. An exception to all this is there is a lawsuit going on in Texas right now that's arguing that the protections for pre-existing conditions are unconstitutional. And so depending on how the courts rule on that and if it makes its way to the Supreme Court, Congress might need to act on that. And it's unclear whether, kind of a Democratic perspective on pre-existing conditions or a GOP perspective would rule out. The GOP has said that they want to protect folks with pre-existing conditions, but some of the healthcare plans Republicans have floated in recent years did not include those protections. So it's not totally clear there. And then the other biggest development from the midterm elections, unrelated actually to the federal elections, was in a number of states, three states, there were ballot initiatives to expand Medicaid. And actually, there were ballot initiatives in four states, but they passed in three of those states, Nebraska, Idaho, and Utah. And that's a big deal because these are conservative states. Where voters otherwise elected largely Republican members to the Senate and to Congress. And so the fact that these same voters who otherwise voted red chose to expand Medicaid shows how popular of a program it is. And in other states like Maine and Wisconsin and Kansas, Democratic candidates won gubernatorial races, and those candidates who are going to be sworn in January are likely to be in favor of expanding Medicaid in those states as well. So that's a big deal for folks who, are at the federal poverty line or just above it. They might have expanded healthcare options now, and it could also prove popular, more popular in other states, and we could see some changes start to occur there. So those were kind of the big developments that are actually going to happen. And then, otherwise, there's a thought among experts that the debate is now going to shift towards Medicare for All. We've got a Democratic presidential primary race coming up, which I can't believe I'm already talking about, but that's in 2020. And folks are already starting to gear up for that now. And a lot of progressive politicians included Medicare for All, Bernie Sanders' plan in particular, as part of their platforms. And there's likely going to be debate among Democrats about what that policy would look like. And it remains to be seen whether the Democratic Party will, you know, align behind that idea entirely. But it could definitely focus the debate in the coming future, especially now that the Affordable Care Act is safe.
Well, great. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate the insight. Great work as always. Ali Melito, Jacob Passy, you guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Welcome back, everyone. And of course, now it's time for our Legal Eagles segment. And I'm not sure if anyone in the audience is aware, but we just had midterm elections. And here to give us their insights into what that means for retirement and retirement legislation and what's going on in the House and Senate are our friends from Groom Law Group, Mr. David Levine and Kevin Walsh. Hey, guys, how are you?
We are great. I'm already here in Florida kicking off my campaign for Levine 2020.
Levine 2020, retirement for all. I can see it right now. So, Kevin, let's start with you. I'm sure you as one of the Legal Eagles and David were both on the edge of your seats watching the midterm results come in. Now that you've had time to kind of think about it, what's your analysis on what you saw?
So I think just a little bit is laying the groundwork of what the outcome of the election was. And I'm hoping everybody who's listening to this knows the outcome. But you had Democrats take the House of Representatives, which is significant because it breaks up united government. So for the past 2 years, you've had a Republican White House, you've had a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. And as of Tuesday night, you have divided government again, with Democrats taking over the House of Representatives in January. Now, from a retirement policy standpoint, does this mean major changes? And it likely doesn't. It likely doesn't mean major changes because, fortunately, retirement security has been one area where Republicans and Democrats have tended to agree with each other. Now, where could changes come in? Changes could come in because we're going to see big changes in terms of who's leading the key retirement committees. So David's going to talk a little bit about the changes we're seeing in the House of Representatives, where it's likely that Congressman Richie Neal is going to take over the gavel at Ways and Means.
Absolutely. And thanks, Kevin. And I agree. What exactly this means for retirement is a little in flux, and it may not change that much. But in the House, the Ways and Means Committee, Richie Neal, a Democrat from Massachusetts, is widely expected to be the next chair of Ways and Means. One of his very high priorities has been retirement policy. He has been out with many proposals over the years, ranging from everything from increased utilization of IRAs to increased coverage activities. And these are items, some of which dovetail into recent, like open maps. We've talked a lot about that, but go into a wide area. So you'll definitely, I think, see a lot of interest and priority coming out of the House as we go forward. And of course, there's education and workforce as well. But I think you'll see a lot of movement together in there to really put some legislation out there. The big question is how does it actually align with the Senate? What do you think about the Senate leadership, Kevin?
So the Senate leadership's in flux. While Republicans are keeping the Senate, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Hatch, is retiring at the end of this Congress. And he's been kind of, RISA has been his baby. And so it really raises two concerns. One is this going to provide an incentive for that final push to get RISA over the line during the lame duck session? And then second, without Hatch in charge of the committee, will RISA continue to be a Senate priority, or will whoever the new chairman is have their own priorities? And right now, what we're hearing is there's really two candidates to succeed the chairmanship. You've got Senators Grassley and Senators Crapo. And the real issue here is that Grassley has the better hand to take the chairmanship. At the same time, he's currently the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and it's unclear if he's going to move over.
So I think from our perspective at this point, Jeff, we're waiting to see some of the leadership changes. Retirement will certainly be high on the list. We'll have to see if lame duck will go through. There's a bunch of stuff that we have to deal with, like getting a budget done and other activities. The government could shut down, everybody could get along, or simply people could just move quickly to resolve things and punt things to the next Congress. One thing to keep in mind, when we start a new Congress, legislation starts anew. They pull things off the shelf, but things get reintroduced and you go through a lot of processes all over again. And what we're thinking for next week, we'll talk a little bit about maybe some things we'll see in legislation in 2019.
Well, that's great, guys. Let me ask this question, and I hate to bring up a sore subject, but remember when we went through the budgeting and we went through the tax cuts, and on the docket for consideration was kind of removal of portion or all of the deferred status of 401k or deferred contributions. Do you think that kind of comes up again? And I don't want you to put yourselves out there in terms of, you know, giving an opinion, but do you think that's something that possibly comes up as a new budget gets rolled out, as retirement legislation comes to a fore? We've got these new committee chair people, persons, I should say, that are, you know, pushing different agendas, quote unquote. Do you think that comes up again?
Well, there's always the chance that anything that has been out there, whether tax changes could come, and these are really tax revenue items, could come out again. The realistic discussion is, it really depends on the interaction between the Democrats and Republicans. Well, I would not be jumping up and down expecting this. I don't think that's been at the centerpiece of what you've seen from all the potential leaders of these committees in the past. But anything is possible. But because once it's out there once, it's out there again. So we will have to see where it goes. I think my personal guess, but I could be wrong, is what I think we're likely to see more sort of the things like you saw in RESA, sort of improving, simplifying, enhancing the system type of ideas. Things focused on coverage and and how people deal with their retirement years is probably more at the center, but I could certainly be wrong. Anybody who claims to know this definitively is making it up. Yeah. So to sound like a lawyer and close it out, I'll say that there's a reasonable, more likely basis that there may or may not be an answer on this in the Congress.
Whoa, David, hedge your bets.
That's true, you're right. So maybe not is the short answer.
Well, guys, thank you so much. I always appreciate it. Always great seeing you in person, talking to you on the phone. And I guess more to come. And, you know, I guess we're going to see whether or not retirement is one of the last few bipartisan issues in Washington, D.C. So have a great, wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week, my friends.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps up yet another great episode of The Weekly Pulse. Hope you enjoyed it. We certainly thank you for stopping by. Hope you got some great information and insight into what's going on this week with the markets, technology, retirement, personal finance, and so much more. Special thanks to Megan Scipione for her insights into what's happening with financial wellness. Thank you again for joining us. We look forward to having you back next week on The Weekly Pulse.